joining us now, the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber. Good morning, Pete. How you doing, man?
Webby.
I'm doing well, and thank you very much for having me on here this morning.
Always a pleasure, cover boy.
Cover boy for old folks.
Yeah, I saw the photo Sunday. Of course, the Tennessee, and I guess yeah. Adam Vingan did a story on just how they're going to be broadcasting this stuff. And there was Pete front and center on the cover of the Tennessean sports section Sunday.
And I love that. And I got to tell you, both TV and radio, you guys have all done a tremendous job broadcasting these games. It can't be easy not being there. But you guys have done a great job, both TV and radio. So kudos to all the Preds broadcasters.
He's not there.
Thank you, John. And the league did a real good job of sending us all that we need to put the show on properly.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, here we are. I mean, we can now say it's a must-win, right, for the Nashville Predators. Yep. I know hockey teams and players and coaches don't like to say it's a must-win unless they're facing elimination. I guess we'll spin it forward. Do you expect them to come out and play desperate hockey tomorrow? I mean, they pretty much have to. It's do or die, right?
Yes, I do expect that. And here's the thing. They played that way in the first period yesterday and did not get truly rewarded for it. So that is the obstacle that has to be overcome there. I mean, here they were, Coyotes with a deflection in front. Turns out to be their first shot on goal of the whole darn game. And they go out in front 1-0. They have to wait to the second period. And another Victor Arvidsson burst, and it's all tied up. But after that, offside call in the third period, that changes your scorecard immensely.
Well, and I think that's the thing we were talking about in both losses, a key moment that the Predators didn't react to quite well. Obviously, early on, that fluke goal in game one, and then after that, the momentum certainly shifts, and I think 12 shots in a row come from the Coyotes, and then certainly yesterday, the Duchesne offsides eliminating the Turris goal, and then right after that, bang, bang, a couple goals, of course, well, bang, certainly with Garland's, and then Hall coming later on the power play. But it just seemed like this team didn't react to either case of adversity very well. I know there's a lot more goes into a 60-minute game than that, but certainly those two situations stand out.
And the playoffs, Pete, you know this. You've seen a million playoff games. It's about overcoming adversity, right?
Yeah, that always is. It always is. And we could even go back to when the Sabres won Game 7 against Ottawa back in 1997, their only Game 7 win in team history. What happened earlier in that series, and Dominik Hasek pulled the chute. There's the greatest goaltender perhaps of our generation on the team. Steve Shields got put in.
Yep.
And Steve Shields came up big with a 1-0 victory in Game 6 to force Game 7, and there was the Derek Plant overtime goal.
I remember. I think I was in the building that night. Well, I was definitely in the city that night, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
UC Saros, we're talking with Pete Weber from the Preds broadcaster. What do you make of UC Saros so far? You know, obviously his first NHL playoff series as a starting goaltender. I thought he played really well yesterday up until that third period. You know, Charlie gave his numbers a little while ago. What have you seen from him?
I've seen commendable performance by him. And I also see the Predators, you know, and they're not independent of each other, these games. But if he hadn't had that scrambling sequence of saves in the first period of game number 2, we might already be doing a postseason evaluation of the team, because he enabled them to come back and win the second game and tie the series. And I'm not going to be surprised if he does the very same thing tomorrow afternoon. And by the way, I know it's multiple games and somebody has to play at that time, but I think Chicago Cubs fans really have, at least pre-1988 Cubs fans, before they got lights at Wrigley Field, really have to identify with the Predators in all these afternoon starts.
Well, you know, I don't even know who won that last game last night. I haven't even looked at it yet.
I mean, I'll tell you, I went to sleep after the second period and then get up to read about the fantastic comeback by the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
So in many ways, I'm sure the Oilers themselves are probably happy their fans were not allowed in the building.
Well, at 11 o'clock our time last night, they were midway through the second period. Yeah. And I right. go, okay.
Even I was in bed by then. You know me, I'm Mr. Night Owl.
But also, tip of the hat to Darcy Kemper. I mean, playing the back-to-back, 39 of 40 saves. And, of course, their backup was not available. So they go with Kemper, and give it to him, man. I mean, sometimes a goaltender can steal some things for you. But, I mean, like yesterday, turning back 39 of 40.
Well, there's been one start for the now backup goaltender, Aiden Hill, against the Predators. That was his first game in the NHL. He shut the Predators out. So that goes back a few years. But still, that is a potential storyline for you right there if he should get called in to duty.
Pete, the Jofa line's been terrific this series, but we've always, you know, we've always clamored for more secondary scoring from this team. Does that concern you at all that, you know, other than the first line, the other lines haven't really clicked yet this series?
It won't bother me if the first line scores five times tomorrow.
Right, yeah.
You know, Philip Forsberg, it's been 7, 6, and 7 shots on goal the first three games of the series. Victor Arvidsson had 6 yesterday and had that goal that tied things up. So, those guys I don't have any problem with, but whoever else can step up. And, you know, oftentimes in the past, it's been guys like Nick Bonino and Colton Sissons who lead that way. But I'm sort of anticipating, and I'll talk with Coach Hines a little bit later on today, I'm sort of anticipating maybe a restructuring of some of the lines going into tomorrow's potential elimination game.
Well, certainly the second line tourist, Duchesne Granlund. Do you hug him or kick him in the butt? Which or both?
Can you do it simultaneously?
Yeah.
Hey, my parents did for years. Yeah. So my parents did a great job of that. So.
Yeah, here, let me give you a hug and turn you around.
Yeah, my mother would hug me while my father would kick me in the butt.
Yeah.
But if you have a soccer playing parent group, they can probably hug and do one of those kicks around the backside very, very quickly.
There you go.
But, you know, you just – and certainly, man, if that – you wonder, obviously, we can if and but everything, right? But
yes.
The tourist goal stands. Where does this go from here?
Yeah.
But certainly – and tourist, I mean, what? How many times has he hit the post in this thing?
Yeah, I know.
You know, several times
I was saying earlier, Webby, I just – you know, of all people to have a goal, you know, brought back, it's tourist, you know. This guy scores what looks to be the biggest goal of his Nashville Predators career.
Yeah, potential game winner.
winner, series shifter, the whole deal. And, of course, you know, his goal gets called back because Duchesne's offsides.
Yep, which also takes me back to the 2017 final game one. And the Forsberg goal that would have been the first of the game gets called back. Who knows what happens in that series if that had not happened.
Pete Weber with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Pete Weber Sports. Tomorrow afternoon, 1:30, game number 4. Down 2-1 are the Predators with that as well. Defensively, maybe Matthias Ekholm, maybe not one of his better games. Certainly, you know, no one is going to, you know, in my mind, dispute the quality of player that he is. I mean, he's outside. If you didn't have Yossi or Ellis on that front D pairing, he's a front line demon. We know that.
He stepped in and done it in the past.
Yeah, and certainly has, but sort of got left out to dry there a little bit with a nifty move that time by Garland. I mean, you know, sometimes you just got to tip your hat.
That's right. Tip your hat, get back, and get the tying goal. But unfortunately, that did not happen yesterday.
What do you do, Pete? Give me the crystal ball. I mean, we're all searching for answers here, Pete. Be the man behind the curtain. What do we do?
First of all, I'm going to say this. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. But I think they're good. You have to approach the game just as they approached yesterday's first period. They didn't get rewarded for it, but it's like a football coach who realizes to have a running game, you have to keep pounding it into the line and get things developed. And you go from there. Whether they didn't get rewarded with that play yesterday, I think any coach in the world would accept the same start to a game stylistically that the Predators had yesterday and do that in the first period tomorrow. And you have to think that sooner or later, it's something, one of those is going to go into the net. And if it does, and we've pretty much seen with the Coyotes over the last few years, since Rick Tocchet became the head coach there, they love to just simply take a 1-0 lead and then suffocate the bejeebers out of the opponent.
What is a bejeeber?
Oh, it's like a widget.
It's somewhat like that. It's a kind of like a that or a thingamajig.
Exactly. Or whatchamacallit.
Yeah.
Webby, overall, what do you make of how the NHL has handled this whole thing with the two bubble cities? I think the games have been outstanding. You know, mm-hmm. I even though there are no fans in attendance, the games have been fun to watch. I think the NHL has done an outstanding job putting this whole thing together.
I agree. Steve Mayer and company with a presentation for the league. I was just reading a piece on The Athletic this morning when you guys called about the two, if you will, sound DJs in the two buildings and how they're going after this. And it's a very intriguing read. And you know, that is a big part of it. I don't think I could handle this if it were entirely antiseptic and we only get the guys yapping at each other from ice level on the broadcast. They have done a fine job doing all of this. As a matter of fact, there was even in the article referencing a Connor McDavid goal that the guy felt he was late in responding to. But you guys tell me, what does it sound like to you? Does it sound like a normal game?
It does.
Yeah.
But you know one thing I noticed between the two places, Scotiabank in Toronto, yeah, and then obviously Rogers Centre in Edmonton,
yeah,
that they keep a level of crowd noise higher in the Toronto one than they do Rogers Centre, which I prefer to hear what's happening on the ice than just a piped-in level of crowd, you know.
Yeah, I see you working there, yeah.
Let me tell you about that Toronto thing. So I'm listening on radio to the Canes-Rangers game number one of the series, and I'm texting my buddies in the Carolina broadcast booth saying, hey, tell your sound engineer. He has that crowd noise up so loud, I can hear that you're talking, but I can't hear what you're saying. And that's something.
So we agree. Yeah. I don't know why I would notice that, but I just said, man, it just seems like there's a constant, you know, not a roar, but a level that they got it too high with it. You know, and can you imagine, and I know you don't get to see all the games because obviously you're doing, you know, pregame, postgame, and all the stuff that you do and then get back home. But I know
quite a bit.
Yeah, I know. But can you imagine Crispy's eyeballs by now? Because he hasn't missed a single game, you know.
I don't have to imagine. I talk to him on a regular basis, even during intermissions of the Predators games. So
yeah.
He asked me all sorts of interesting questions at that point, none of which I will reveal publicly.
Well, I think it's coming off great because I've heard both. I've heard the radio, you know, and then I've heard obviously the when I'm at the house, the TV and everything, and then you know, and we sort of the undersung hero of all this is your director of broadcasting, Bob Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think we got to give my fellow Brewer fan a shout out, Bob Cole?
Yeah, give him some props for sure.
And he's so old, he also remembers the Milwaukee Braves.
Oh man. No, I mean maybe the Seattle
Pilots.
The Seattle Pilots, rather.
That's right.
Yeah. You know. So did you? You know, you heard the story about this. The reason the Brewers' colors are what they are is because when they moved, they didn't have enough time. They actually wore Pilots jerseys in their first season in Milwaukee. They just had to take all the names off the back of them.
Yeah, they had to do that. And, I mean, you talk about not enough time. The Pilots' equipment truck left Arizona. We're told this is the pre-cell phone era, of course, in 1970, told to make a call when they got up a little bit further north to be told whether to turn right to go to Milwaukee or left to go to Seattle. That's how little time they had.
Oh, man. Pete, always a pleasure. Hello to Claudia, and just enjoy what you do, man.
Thank you, guys. And if I didn't, I couldn't do it, I don't think. So
yeah.
There is one potential elimination game tonight, Calgary and Winnipeg.
Who stood? Hey, what about that Penguins Canadiens game last night? Wow.
Oh, comeback.
Yeah.
In the second period.
What was it? The Penguins got up 3-0.
I think they were up 3-1 or 3-0 or something.
3-1. Yeah.
3-1. Yeah.
I've been hearing from some of my buddies from Pittsburgh all morning. They're not feeling good. They're feeling about as good as Preds fans are.
But I tell you what, it was fun watching Shea Weber. But I mean, he played so well.
Yeah. Always rooting for him.
And Jeff Petrie, son of former Tigers pitcher Dan.
That's right.
Game-winning goals in this series.
When he goes to the restaurant, does he have a Petri dish?
Oh, my gosh.
Pete, love you. Only bye.
Thanks, Pete.
Only when he goes to the lab. Diagnosis.